Protect your dream home with American Family Insurance. And you can weather any storm. You'll also save up to 25% by bundling home, auto, and life. American Family Insurance. Get a quote. Find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Discounts may not apply to all coverages on an auto or home policy. Discounts do not apply to life insurance policies. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies, American Family Life Insurance Company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
My Seven Chakras, Episode 252.
Be here now is important.
The seven chakras, swirling vortices of energy, positioned throughout our body, from the base of the spine to the crown of the head. For thousands of years, this ancient wisdom has been passed on from master to disciple. What are the functions of these energy centers? And could these chakras help you unlock your destiny and find your true purpose? Welcome to My Seven Chakras. And now, your host, Aditya Jai Kumar.
What's up, Action Tribe? AJ here, host and founder of My Seven Chakras, the show where we provide you the wisdom and action steps that will help you transform your life. So if you are new to this show, then I want to give you a warm welcome. And if you're like most of the listeners that get to know about our show, then I'm pretty sure that you are not just looking for information. Because if it's information that you seek, then you can find it on Google or Bing or some other search engine. In order to make progress towards an awakening and transform your life in every way, then you need a community that will hold space for you, allow you to express your voice, share and grow, and really help you step into your new life. And that's why our Facebook group, our Facebook community, Action Tribe, is exactly what you need. Our group will hold you accountable, provide you feedback, and cheer you till the finish line. And we also have a big special chakra challenge for every day, so that you can take small steps that will make a big change in your life. So if you want to join thousands of other members, just go to my7chakras.com/tribe. That's my7chakras.com/tribe. And now let's bring on our special guest for today, Joanne Watts, who is the daughter of renowned philosopher, poet, and scholar Alan Watts. So Joanne, are you ready to inspire?
I definitely am.
Wonderful. So, Action Tribe, today we were actually going to have both Joanne and Ann Watts on our show, but because of a technical issue, because of a technical glitch, we could only have Joanne for this episode, but I'm looking forward to having Ann as well on a future episode. Joanne and Ann are the first-born children of British-born American philosopher, writer, speaker, and counterculture hero Alan Watts. Together, they edited the collected letters of Alan Watts, which is going to be what we're discussing on today's episode. So thanks a lot for joining me, Joanne.
You're very welcome. I'm glad to be here.
Great, great. So this is so exciting because, and the reason why I'm saying that is because over the years, so many of our community members and people all around the world have read about Alan Watts. They've heard about Alan Watts. They're completely inspired by some of the YouTube videos as well about him and about how he thought about life and the beautiful message that he shares. So it is indeed incredible that both of you took the time to bring out this book so that his message can be further shared. Now, on the topic of inspiration, we always start our show with some inspiration. My question to you is, what is your favorite inspirational quote these days and how do you apply it in your life?
I think I would have to say the phrase "be here now" is important. I feel like too many of us aren't in the present. We're looking either to the past or to the future, and that we need to focus on the now.
Mm-hmm. So profound, so true. Action Tribe, no matter where you are right now, no matter what you are doing, be here now, because the message that is going to be shared in today's episode is going to be really useful for you going forward. So be here now. So Joanne, for the few people who haven't yet heard about Alan Watts before this, who was Alan Watts?
Alan Watts was a philosopher that came about during the 1940s, 50s, 60s, mm-hmm. and early 70s. He started writing when he was about 15, 16 years old, very interested in Eastern philosophies at that time. He wrote about Zen Buddhism, and he went on from there to study Christian doctrine very seriously, became a priest, and ended up being chaplain at Northwestern University for a number of years. And then in 1950, he left there and gradually made his way to California, where he went back to his interest in Eastern philosophies. He taught at the American Academy of Asian Studies mm-hmm. in San Francisco, and then continued his writing. His books became very popular. His lectures became very popular. And during the 50s and 60s, people began to look upon him as a type of guru, which he was not happy being labeled that.
Okay.
He became very popular, and he died in 1973.
Well, thanks a lot for sharing that information with us. Now, the book is titled The Collected Letters of Alan Watts, and you've obviously told us when he started writing these letters, right? You said he was around 15 or 16. Do you have any idea what really made him write these letters? What was the initial spark, so to speak?
Well, I was speaking of his writing of books when I mentioned that he started writing 16. But yes, the book encompasses his letters from the age of 13, actually. When he was away at school, he was writing to his parents. And he continued to write to his parents throughout his life. His father died a year after he did, so you can see the span there. And those letters were basically very informational about what he was doing, what he was thinking, and so on, and what family was doing, how we were growing up, those types of things to his parents. And then over the years, he also communicated with a number of very interesting people, discourses on Christianity and Buddhism and LSD and politics and so on. So the book is quite a compendium of a variety of letters to a variety of very notable people, everybody from Aldous Huxley, Tim yes. Leary, and so on.
Wonderful. So obviously he was, I guess, present during the golden age, right, in the West, where people were awakening and getting exposed to so many different ideas, especially from the East, music and philosophy, and also substances, right? So different types of things that happened. What was Alan's childhood like, as reflected in these letters, and based on what you know?
Well, he was an only child, and his parents were somewhat older parents. He was absolutely adored by his parents, and he adored his parents. Mm-hmm. And when he went away to school, he wrote to them. And his father was always very interested in what Alan became interested in. And so when Alan became interested in Zen Buddhism and became associated with the Buddhist Society of London, his father would go with him to meetings there, and actually eventually became the treasurer of that organization. Wow. My father, by age 20, was the editor of their publication called The Middle Way. It was during that time that he met D.T. Suzuki and started corresponding with such people as Sokeyan Sasaki, who was a Zen master from New York, originally from Japan, and with Carl Jung anyway, he was corresponding with these people who were quite a bit older than he was, and right. he was corresponding on their level, which was pretty unique for somebody that young.
Oh, absolutely. It seems like, based on what you're saying, that Alan Watts was an old soul in a young body, and he had some sort of a memory from his past life, maybe, that helped him relate to and communicate with, I guess, stalwarts or experts in his field back in the day. Like you've spoken about Carl Jung, you mentioned Aldous Huxley, and I believe he had also correspondences with Joseph Campbell, who was such an amazing philosopher. So, you know, somebody who spoke about the hero's journey, and which sparked movies like Star Wars and all these other wonderful movies. But my question here is, Alan Watts was obviously influenced by concepts and philosophies such as Zen Buddhism, Taoism, and Hinduism. So what got him interested in these Eastern philosophies? Any idea what was the spark that brought his attention there?
When he was a child, his mother taught gymnasium, as it was called back in those days, to young women in a private school whose parents were missionaries in the Far East, and China and Japan and so on. And they would bring back gifts for her that were beautiful, embroideries and china and things like that. And in addition to that, my grandfather, Alan's father, would read books to him, especially he was especially fascinated with the Rudyard Kipling books, Kim and those books. Those things sparked his imagination. And then when he was away at school, he found a bookstore in London that had lots of books, or Orientalia, I think it was the name, and he would go and spend hours looking at books of Asian art and Asian philosophy. And it happened to be in one of those books that he found a pamphlet from the Buddhist Society of London, and he submitted his pamphlet on Zen to them, and they were so inspired by it, they asked him to lecture to the group, not knowing that he was only 15 years old.
Wow. It's so interesting that sometimes, you know, you certain events, certain interactions that you have lead to one thing and then to another, and all of a sudden you're invited to give a lecture, right? So it's so wonderful how the universe works with synchronicities. And many of our listeners also might be going through this phase right now where, you know, they just click some button, they're searching some word, and they stumble upon the interview that we're having right now. So it's fantastic how the universe works. Now, speaking about synchronicity, my question is, what inspired the both of you to put this book together, and what was the process like?
Well, it was quite a process. As you know, the book weighs about 2.5 pounds, and
yes.
There's probably about 400 letters in the book. In addition to my sister and I did a lot of commentary in the book to kind of set the stage for what was going on in Alan's life at the time when he wrote the letters and wrote his books. We had the letters. They were actually in my possession. I had two legal-sized file drawers just stuffed with papers from his after his death. And the publisher, New World Library in California, was republishing some of his out-of-print books. And in a conversation with the publisher, I happened to mention that we had letters, and he was very excited about that. And so we arranged to publish these letters. And it took about 2 years. Alan was as avid a letter writer as he was a book writer. And many of the letters were as much as 3 pages long, and he often would say to the person who's writing, "I'm sorry to be so long-winded, but I just so enjoy writing." And it was quite a process because, fortunately, in a way, he made carbon copies of his letters. And so we had those to scan and put into Word documents. And then the letters to his parents, they had saved every letter he ever wrote. And when he was writing his autobiography, In My Own Way, I think that they sent him the file they had of his original letters so that he would have those as resource for writing his autobiography. Anyway, so that's kind of the story of it. It was, you know, as I say, it took us about two and a half years. And I worked on it almost 7 days a week.
Wow. So a lot of work. I'm sure 2 years is not a short time, but at the same time, like you mentioned, you were working on these letters and putting them together and working every day. I'm not sure if you know, but I'm based in India. So that's my hometown and I'm in Vancouver right now. But whenever I go back home, I go through some of my diaries, right? And going through these diaries is usually a process, you know, because you go back in time, right? As you read the notes that you made 2 years, 5 years, 7 years back. And I'm sure this process of compiling these letters and going through them must have been pretty emotional, correct? So what was the whole experience like for you and Anne?
Well, it was very enlightening in many ways, because, of course, especially in the letters to his parents, and not only to his parents, because sometimes he mentioned us to friends and other people, but it was a picture of our growing up, and it was fascinating and revelatory in many ways. So, you know, and it was a bonding experience for both of us, too, because some of the truths that we held, we found to, in fact, be true, which was interesting. So it was quite a journey.
Got it. So what was it like to grow up in the Watts household, so to speak? What was it like to grow up as a daughter of Alan Watts?
Well, that was interesting too, obviously. The best part of it, of course, was the vast number of very interesting people that came through our lives.
Right.
So, you know, we had contact with so many fascinating people. You know, I think a lot of people ask us what it was like to have a father like Alan Watts. And or what he was like as a father. He was very loving and caring when present. Unfortunately, as his fame grew, he was less and less present. And for the first 10 years of my life, anyway, my sister is 4 years younger, we, you know, saw quite a bit of him as he was chaplain at Northwestern University. And then when our parents divorced, I was sent off to boarding schools. I lived in England for a bit and lived in Southern California at a boarding school there. And so I didn't see him much, maybe on vacations. Certainly the time I was in England, I didn't see him at all. We obviously corresponded.
Right.
And then for my sister, It was a little bit different, which I would leave to her to explain. Probably, I think that would be best when you interview her. But you know, he had a complicated life. He was so involved in his work. Number one, he just, you know, read, studied. He was an incredible scholar and an incredible writer, and so he was always involved in those tasks, and then he was traveling to lecture and so on, and it was hard for him to be a family man. He second wife, they had five children, and he was not a present father for those children except very occasionally. And so, you know, for all of us, his absence was probably painful.
Thanks a lot for sharing that with us. Now, like you mentioned, obviously you were the daughter of a celebrity back in the day. And what came to my mind is back in the day, there was no email, right? There was no email.
Right.
There was no social media. But yet he was so influential and so popular. So how was it different back then? I mean, so many people getting to know about Alan Watts without any social media, without any technology in that sense.
Well, I think the books, you know, and his lectures. Obviously, at this point, I think he's becoming even more popular than he was back then because of the lectures on YouTube and the Facebook media, where we've got, you know, a number of Alan Watts sites that people go to and discuss his work and so on. But back then, it was more by word of mouth, obviously, and people sharing his books. And he was on television, and he was on gave speeches on the radio, so that those covered a broader spectrum.
Correct.
But, you know, the letters, I think, are amazing because it's probably one of the last collection of letters when you think about it, because of email now and so on. People don't write the letters like they used to. And so we're losing kind of a window into people's development and their interest in various things and how they describe their lives and so on. That's kind of going to be lost unless they're taping it, but then that would be lost too. So,
oh, totally. I mean, now that you have YouTube, you know, different ways of recording, right? So you have YouTube, you've got this podcast that we're doing right now, you've got blogs that are highly popular, and you've got email. But I still feel that, you know, when you write, when you use a pen and put it against paper, that process that you go through is a more direct process to your subconscious mind. And it's, in a way, much more enjoyable. You're able to share much more. So I do still maintain a diary with a pen to note down my thoughts. And many of our listeners as well do the same. I think it's just different. It's more powerful.
Very much so. I did that for a while when I was going through kind of a difficult stage in my life. I kept a diary, and when I go back and read it, I'm amazed at what I wrote, first of all, and that, you know, it was very, became very soul searching. You know, you can you think about what you're going to put down, and you get into it deeply. And I think that that's a very wonderful thing to do.
Now, you shared this a couple of minutes back. You said, of course, he was very gifted, both scholastically and artistically. He was a high achiever. He was doing many things, you know, meeting people, going on radio, going on TV, writing letters, writing books. So what was his life like, really, if you could give us a, you know, deeper insight into that aspect?
Well, you know, he led what people here would call a bohemian lifestyle.
Right.
He lived frugally but elegantly, and I always, you know, felt that he loved to surround himself with art and beautiful things, and but they weren't necessarily expensive things. They were maybe stones from the beach, or a piece of driftwood, or a beautiful piece of pottery. Things like that that encompassed his life, and you know, rugs from Mexico, you know, weavings and things that were beautiful. So that was kind of his way. And he, of course, he loved Asian art, and he loved to do calligraphy. He did beautiful Chinese calligraphy. Became very adept at that. And you know, his life was fairly simple in terms of his daily life. He would get up early in the morning around 4. He would write extensively for a period of time, and then he would maybe go. He lived between his ferry boat in Sausalito on the water, which was just a sublime spot. And then up on the mountain near Mount Tamalpais in Mill Valley, he was, had a cabin there. And those both served somewhat as retreat, although the Vallejo, the ferry boat, became much more public in later years. But he, you know, would go out and walk on the hillside, or sometimes we would go to the beach for a picnic and take bread and a bottle of wine and maybe a cooked chicken or something and sit on blankets and enjoy the surf, etc. So those were things that that would happen. And then, of course, he was, you know, he'd have to give lectures and take off on an airplane and go someplace else and things like that. But, you know, I think his life was fairly simple in that respect.
Got it. And a couple of things over here. I mean, one thing comes to my mind is that and this is something I believe that the best things in life, the most beautiful things in life, need not necessarily be expensive. Like you pointed out, it can be cheap, it can be free also, because I remember I'd gone to Chile a couple of years back, and in one of the mines or deep down, I just found a rock, you know, like a stone, which came out of nowhere, and I somehow picked it up, and I still have it at my home right now. It has beautiful meaning. It reminds me of my trip to Chile. And like you mentioned, it doesn't have to, it can be just a crystal, a pebble, something you find on the beach, but it's just the connection between you and that object. And the other thing is, I haven't been much to San Francisco, but when I did, when I crossed the Golden Gate Bridge, I did notice Sausalito. And there's something very special about that place. I don't know, it's like, I guess it's the energy that is there of that place, which is very calming, very reassuring, and it's very different. Yeah, thanks a lot for sharing, you know, that story. Now,
can I share something with you?
Yes, please go ahead.
Quickly, you mentioned that you went to Chile and you found a stone.
Yeah.
Well, I too have been in Chile, and I was a fly fishing guide down there, and I found a beautiful stone that I brought back, and it sits on my altar with the Buddha.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Wow. So amazing. I think that's something special about Chile. It was near one of the copper mines, and you know, people are debating this, but I still feel that even inanimate objects have some consciousness in them, and it was some meaning or some reason behind why that rock just, you know, somehow fell in front of me and I picked it up. So I still have it at my home, and it's so good to note that you do too. You also found a rock in the beautiful place of Chile. Now, my question is, obviously you told us about his lifestyle. How did his lifestyle or thoughts or beliefs or work influence you or your decisions in your life?
You know, it's interesting because as a teenager, I think typically children tend to rebel against their parents, and they go in the opposite direction, which is what I did. And I ended up being married and being involved in the business world. My husband was a aspiring executive in several companies and so on. And so I led a very I can't quite stay. I can't think of the word of it, but my lifestyle was far from the bohemian lifestyle that I grew up in. Eventually, I turned back. I went through several phases in my life doing that. And I think Alan did that as well. And it was kind of interesting to me when I was reading his letters and writing commentary that I saw myself a lot in, what his decisions and how he lived, and I saw that in me as well.
Interesting. Now, when I told the members of my Facebook group that I'll be interviewing you too, of course we couldn't have Anne today, but our members got really excited. So do you mind if we go through a few of our listener questions?
No, not at all.
Great. Okay. So Grace P. asks, which teacher or spiritual leader was his greatest influence during his lifetime?
I would say perhaps Sokeyan Sasaki.
Who was that leader, if you can tell us a little bit more about him?
Sokeyan was a Zen priest ordained in Japan. He was the son of a samurai family who became an artist and carver and worked on temples, repairing them. His mother was a concubine, and he eventually came with a group of Zen after he had lived in a Zen monastery and was studying Zen, and he came to the United States in the late 1800s and went back and forth to Japan. It's a long story, but there's a wonderful book that's just come out that I would like to mention called Zen Odyssey. It's about his life and about my grandmother's life with him. And it's quite remarkable. It's published by Wisdom, and you can find it online or ask for it at a bookstore. But Zen Odyssey by Janica Anderson, and it really gets into his life and so on. But Alan started corresponding with him at a young age, when he was like 18, 19, 20, and did not realize, of course, that when he came to America, he would meet Sokeon in New York, and that Sokeon would eventually become his stepfather-in-law. And so that's quite a remarkable thing. But he mentions him often, and I think that the way Sokeon was as a teacher was very meaningful to Alan. And he didn't actually, he briefly studied with him, but that was only briefly. And unfortunately, Sokeon was interned during World War II and died shortly after he was released from prison camp. So that was, I think, about 1945. So regretfully, we didn't have his knowledge for many more years that he could have lived, but there's some books out by him, and I think they are also published by Wisdom. Mm-hmm. So,
got it. Now, Susan Stone has an interesting question, which sort of speaks to the idea that as daughters of Alan Watts, you obviously led a different life, right, compared to maybe other children. So as children, did they feel differently than others? Did they share their knowledge or feel as if they would not fit in if they did?
I have to say that I did go through that somewhat. Being as our lifestyle was slightly on the bohemian side of things,
yes,
other than the traditional, we weren't the Leave It to Beaver family, if you're aware of what that was, a TV program that was very popular for years, which was kind of the classic American family thing. But no, we did not have that. And there was some, when my father left the church in 1950, there was some scandal around all of that, with my mother going off with some of the man and my father having a girlfriend and so on and so forth. And I remember my friends could, I could go over to their house, but my friends weren't allowed to visit my house. So right. there were problems like that. And I remember being teased in school that I was a preacher's daughter, things like that, you know. So, yeah, there were some barriers to get over.
Got it. I'm sure it was not easy, especially at that point in life. So the next question is by Nancy Norvell, who asks, what was the triggering factor or spiritual experience that changed the course of his life from a normal life or standard life of expectations to, you know, like a radical change into spirituality? Was there any such thing that you know of?
You know, I can't speak to that particularly, other than I think that he got in 1950 was definitely the change in his life, and I go into this quite a bit in the book, but he I think we had been trying so hard to fuse Christian doctrine with Eastern thought.
And, yes.
I think it just wasn't working the way he wanted it to. I think he was very bothered by the concept of original sin, and that, you know, these ideas that Christian doctrine, especially as it is practiced today, is very stifling, and he much preferred the freedom of thought with Eastern philosophies, and just reached the point where he had enough of that, and so that was the transition in his life. And he must have been, I don't know, I can't think of how old he was at that time, but maybe 30, 32, 33, 34, somewhere in there.
Thanks for sharing. Now, the next question is about people who have listened to the show right now, people who are listening. And we usually ask our guests to suggest one action step that people can do after the episode. So my question to you is, if Alan Watts were here today, right now, and maybe he is, what is that one action step that he would recommend for our listeners today, based on what we've discussed?
I would say find a nice place, go outside and enjoy, look up at the sky, look through the trees, smell the earth, and listen with your ears. Just involve all your senses and breathe deeply in that. And see, that's part of Be Here Now. See what you're feeling and enjoy it.
Action Tribe, to read the entire show notes for today's episode, including the inspirational quote, the book recommendation, and certain pieces of wisdom that you might not have been able to capture right away, visit our website my7chakras.com/252. That's my7chakras.com/252. Tell me what you eat, and I will tell you who you are. Now, this is a powerful quote by Jean Savarin, and it is so true. Each and every day now, we're learning about the importance of consuming natural, healthy, non-GMO, and organic food. And while that's great on paper, in real life, we do face a few challenges. Number one,
organic food tends to be more expensive.
And number two,
many of us don't live close to an organic supermarket.
But all of that is going to change, because Thrive Market is here to support Action Tribe. And here are seven reasons why.
Number one,
Thrive Market is a revolutionary online marketplace on a mission to make healthy living easy and affordable for everyone.
Number two,
you can shop for thousands of the best-selling non-GMO foods and natural products, which are always 25 to 50% below traditional retail prices.
Number three,
you can get everything you need: snacks, supplements, safe and non-toxic beauty products, organic kids products, and so much more. And it's all shipped straight to your door.
Number four,
and here's what I found really interesting. You can actually filter the catalog by your values and dietary preferences. Whether you're looking for gluten-free, vegan, or fair trade certified, you can shop for 90 plus values in just one click of a button.
Number five,
and more than 70% of the Thrive Market catalog cannot be found on Amazon.
Number six,
and all packaging, boxes, and inserts are made from recycled paper and are recyclable, 100% zero waste.
Number seven,
because the truth is, Action Tribe, when you shop by your values and you support companies that are trying to change the world,
you really will make a change.
So do the math. If you normally spend about $100 at the grocery store, it would be around $50 to $75 on Thrive Market because of their already low prices. And now, they're giving you an extra 25% off on your first order along with a free 30-day trial. Visit thrivemarket.com/actiontribe. So, what are they getting, Kathy?
25% off your first order and a free 30-day trial.
Visit thrivemarket.com/actiontribe to get started. The only way to make sense out of change is to plunge into it, move with it, and join the dance. This is a quote by Alan Watts. This is the reason why we focus so much on energy during our show. We live in an ocean of energy around us and within us. And once you realize that it is better to ride the wave instead of fighting against the waves, you begin to flow with the energies of the universe and your efforts become more impactful. That's when you begin dancing with the energy of the universe, and that's what the ancient Chinese used to call Qi Dao Yi Dao, which means that when the universal energy flows, where the universal energy flows, your focus goes. So like Alan Watts shared, no matter what change you're going through in life right now, especially if it's a challenge, move with it and join the dance. So Joanne, as on today, what is your life's mission? What is your life's purpose?
You realize you're asking an 80-year-old woman that question, but
age is just a number.
I know, it's just a number. I live in a very beautiful area of the country. I live in Montana. I'm surrounded by mountain ranges and beautiful rivers and so on. And I just want to continue enjoying my surroundings and living a life that is kind and purposeful. I'm a painter, and I want to, I have lots of paintings yet that I want to do, and that's very on my mind.
Got it. So Action Tribe, like we're learning today, most of us, it's probably true that we're not experiencing all of what nature has to provide to us, like that multi-sensory experience that Alan Watts reminds us to have. Probably it's a good idea for you to, you know, spend more time in nature today, spend more time pursuing creativity. Maybe it's painting or art or whatever it is. And I hope you enjoyed today's episode as we've learned more about the life of Alan Watts through his writing and through the experiences and memories of his daughters, and in particular daughter Joanne today. And no matter where you are right now, whether you are in your car, at your home, or you're out in the open, or you're jogging, I don't know, maybe you're hiking a mountain or on a beach, and whether you're listening to this episode in 2018, 19, or even 20, realize that you, Joanne, and me, we are connected in a wonderful way right now. We're using technology to transcend distance and time as well. And I'm glad that we were able to make such a connection right now. And as we explore more of our consciousness and find out who we truly are, remember that you and me are just like drops in the ocean, bobbing up and down in the ocean of the universe, spending a few moments in conscious connection together. And in the words of Alan Watts, you and I are all as much continuous with the physical universe as a wave is continuous with the ocean. So ponder upon that thought for a few seconds. And with that, we arrive at the last round for today, which is the wisdom round. So Joanne, this round is very simple. It is just four questions, similar to a rapid fire round, through which our listeners can get to know some wisdom from you. So what is the best piece of advice that someone has ever given you?
Well, I think it would have to be basically what you were just saying. To, you know, meet challenges head on and work through them and fully be aware of what is happening around you.
Got it. Name one personal habit that keeps you going these days. Any habit.
Writing is basically it, I guess.
Great. And what is your morning routine like? What do you do in the morning times these days?
Well, that's my time with my husband. We when we get up in the morning, we up fairly early, between 5 and 6 in the morning, and we enjoy our coffee. And we sit together and watch the news with our two wonderful dogs that sit by our sides. And we find that they sleep heavier, more heavily at that time of day than any other time. And it's just, it's very, even though the news is pretty awful most of the time,
right?
It's just, it's our time together to kind of reflect on the day and what we're going to do for the day and so on.
Mm-hmm. So name one book that you'd like to recommend for our listeners today.
One that I've just read recently, which I absolutely love, is The Snow Leopard by Peter Matheson. I've always been drawn to books about that area of the world, the Himalayas, and it's his quest to see a snow leopard, and he's a Zen person, and the book is just wonderful in its description of his travels through that area. So that would be one that I would suggest if somebody hasn't read it.
Great. Thanks a lot for sharing. So Action Tribe, in case you want to listen to this book right away for free, then I have something for you, because audible.com is offering all the listeners of My Seven Chakras one free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial, so that you can get to check out their service. In case you don't know, Audible has many books, including The Autobiography of a Yogi by Paramahansa Yogananda, The Chakra System by Anadia Judith, and A New Earth by Eckhart Tolle. And they do have this book, which is called Snow Leopard as well. To start listening to this book, go to my7chakras.com/freebook. Once again, that's my7chakras.com/freebook, and start listening to recommended book right away. So, Joanne, thank you so much for joining us today. Before you go, tell us one thing that you're grateful for, and how we can find you, and how can our listeners get the book as well.
I guess since you're speaking from India, I don't know what your process or where your listeners are they worldwide or just locally? Or
so I'm in Vancouver right now, but most of my listeners are all around the world, but most of the listeners are from the United States.
All right. Well, for the listeners, especially in the United States, I would greatly encourage you to support your local bookstore by going and buying a copy there. Obviously, it is also available on Amazon, and it's also about available as a Kindle. Those are a couple of ways. I have to tell people, though, that everybody that currently has the book and has seen it just loves the feel of it. It's a beautifully produced book that the publishers did, and it feels good. It's wonderful to smell it and to turn the pages on it and so on. One person who we were interviewed by said he felt like he was being invited into the book. So that's a good thing. And then, I'm sorry, I've forgotten what else you asked me then.
Oh, you know, just in case people want to get to know about you.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
I don't have a website, but I am on Facebook under the name Joan Watts. Interestingly, there's another Joan Watts that's
okay.
Also an artist, but I live in Montana, so you would identify me by that, obviously. Seems that there was one other thing you asked. I'm sorry.
The other thing is something that you're grateful for today.
I'm grateful for. I'm grateful. I have to say I'm grateful for my son, who I am staying with right now. You know, he's my oldest child, and I'm just very grateful for being able to see him. I don't get to see him very often.
Well, thanks a lot for sharing, and I must point out that Newer Library does publish some of the best books available over the years, and in particular, this book, The Collected Letters of Alan Watts, is remarkable. You know, hardcover, the pages are so well done, and just like the previous person did mention, it sort of invites you with a multi-sensory experience. The way you hold it, the smell of the book, and of course the wonderful wisdom that is put together in this particular book. It's going to be a wonderful addition to your library, as it has been of mine. So, Joanne, thank you so much for coming onto our show, talking to us and sharing the wisdom and message of Alan Watts and taking us one step closer to a human revolution.
Thank you so much for having me.
You are listening to My Seven Chakras. Go to mysevenchakras.com. Download your free gift, get inspired, and take action. Transform your life today.
Saving money on exterior wall lights now at Menards. Find your style with Patriot Lighting. Exterior lights enhance the look of your home. Choose from over 50 options from Patriot Lighting. Now through May 19th, get $10 instant savings on a single qualifying purchase of $100 or more on in-stock outdoor wall lights. Check out our entire selection of outdoor lights and see the rest of our deals happening now on Menards.com.
Save big money.